How much does LSU football mean to this state? Well, an LSU fan honored her dad by planting Tiger Stadium sod at his grave, saying he was everything LSU. The Tigers can bring more joy to their fans if they can go out and get it done against Georgia on Saturday. We'll talk to a man who saw both the Bulldogs and the Tigers take on his Auburn Tigers, and he'll break down the strengths and the weaknesses therein. It's a game of trench warfare. Georgia, the best offensive line, maybe the best second-best defensive line LSU will have faced. We'll go in the trenches with Chris Truax and our good buddy Michael Huguenin with all the picks of Conference Championship Saturday. All these stories and more today, Wednesday, December 4th, 2019.
Smart, smart. No look pass. Darius Days. Dunk you very much from the right side. And LSU starting to stretch its legs. It's 49-37 tight. Curry, catch and shoot for three. Online but long rebound. Justin Jackson got it. Tipped it to Kleber. Right to DeLon Wright. Pushes it to Curry. Open in the left corner for three. Rattles it home.
When he's hard in the NFL and not to be taken lightly. I'm proud that I took over a 2-14 team and won back-to-back-to-back NFC South Division titles. But I'm proud to have been part of the 2015 NFC Championship team that represented the NFC in Super Bowl 50, and I'm proud to leave here the winningest Panthers head coach.
Good afternoon. Ron Rivera, winningest coach of the Carolina Panthers. Won't take him long to find another job. No question about that. Welcome. Good afternoon. How are you, Acadiana and around the world? Thanks for dialing us up and getting us however you do. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. My main man, CD. Producer extraordinaire, he is in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, which houses KLWB, which is 103.7 The Game. We got a busy day, a happy hump day to each and every one of you. Ooh, it's a Chamber of Commerce day. It is just flat out gorgeous. Yes, indeed. Nice to have it. It didn't start off gorgeous, but it ended that way for LSU Hoops last night, a 90-54 winner over the UNO Privateers. With the win, the Tigers improved to 6-2. A very sluggish start as LSU went for 0-7 from downtown, trailed by as many as 6 points in the first half, but battled back into it with some steals, and they got to the free throw line. Charles Manning with the play of the first half blocked a UNO shot off the backboard. Trendon Watford then made the Tigers' first three-pointer to tie it at 28-all before LSU finished the half on an 8-0 run to take a 38-30 lead. And then it was all she wrote. All she wrote. So this is still a team in progress. All right, they've got a lot of really good athletes. I'm concerned when they play a team with some size because Emmett Williams is a tremendous athlete, tremendous sleeper, long wingspan. He's a terrific athlete. But when they start going up against the tall timbers, that will be a challenge. This team still trying to figure out its way. Javonte Smart is taking over at the point guard position, and he has been turnover prone, but he finished with 8 assists to go along with 12 points on the night. He finished with just 2 turnovers, so that's a very nice sign for him. Emmett Williams, Trendon Watford led the team with 18 points apiece. The Tigers shot 55% from the field, and so they got a win, as expected, as they should have. And they'll get a blowout win Sunday in a 3 o'clock matchup against Northwestern State, the Demons from Natchitoches. So there you have it. Has there been any other team around that you can think of that has just had so much of a buildup, and now, who cares? That's the Pelicans. My goodness gracious, they just can't figure out a way to win a game. They just can't. And I don't care how good Zion Williamson is. You need more than that. So they've been a huge, huge disappointment. And, man, it is something amiss with the club. I know they're not 100%, but there's just something amiss. I don't know what it is. I don't know who it is, but there is something amiss with that. But enough of hoops, because we've got football to talk about, and we're going to say it all week long. It's Conference Championship Saturday, Sun Belt Conference, 11 a.m. Raging Cajuns, App State in Boone, North Carolina, going to be cold, probably snow on the ground. At 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon, Central Time, LSU versus Georgia. Perfect conditions inside the Mercedes-Benz Stadium building. And then Sunday, perfect weather for the Saints hosting the 49ers. Three big, big matchups. Big matchups across the board. No question about it. We will talk today with Brandon Marcello, who covers the Auburn Tigers. Auburn was the only team that LSU played in their schedule that held LSU under 36 points. In fact, LSU only got 23 against them. LSU beat Auburn 23-20. Georgia beat Auburn 21-14. In Auburn. We're going to talk to Brandon Marcello here in a few minutes to get his unbiased, welcomed opinion on this matchup. And where does he see a difference? Georgia has the number one rush defense in the conference by a large margin. They're the only SEC team to allow less than 100 yards on the ground per game, and they've allowed only one rushing touchdown all season long. The next fewest allotted is 9. LSU leads the conference in passing yards. Man, what a matchup. So we'll talk to Brandon Marcello about that. Ed Orgeron said it's the best offensive line LSU will have faced. Chris Truax, former LSU offensive lineman, will go in the trenches with Chris and talk about this, because Georgia wants to run the football. And that offensive line is big, bigger than big. And LSU's going to have to come up with some schemes to, at the point of attack, to limit DeAndre Swift and the running game. You got to force Jake Fromm into second and long, third and long, and then you can pin your ears back and rely on your linebackers and, more importantly, your secondary against a depleted wide receiver core for Georgia. So we'll talk with Chris Truax. In hour number two, after Hot Topics, we'll be joined by John Hendricks of Forbes Sports. The Saints versus the 49ers. 49ers making their second consecutive trip from the Bay Area. And first it was Baltimore, a tough loss for them, and now they head to their Mercedes-Benz Superdome to take on the Saints. We'll break it all down for you with John. And then Michael Hugan of The Athletic will pick all the winners of the conference championship weekend, including the Raging Cajuns and the Mountaineers of App State. So that's what's on the docket today. Let me say a quick hello to my partner, my producer for the stars. That is one Clint Domain. Clint, how you feeling, buddy? How you doing?
I'm feeling pretty good right now, Jordy. Just saw something pop up through the wires in the last, let's say, 10 minutes or so. That is Billy Napier, Sun Belt Conference Coach of the Year. Definitely well-deserved.
Absolutely. And watch out. Somebody's going to want him. So it's just a question of what does Billy Napier want? Time will be telling on that one. So stay tuned. Stay tuned. We're the station that keeps on giving and giving and giving. We've got a couple of giveaways for you. We have a $50 gift certificate for Half Shell Oyster House. All you have to do is Enter 1037 The Game's Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com. And we also have a $150 gift certificate to Mr. Lester's Steakhouse located inside Cypress Bayou. Just enter to win at 1037 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com. Lots of giveaways. All right, when we come back, the Auburn perspective of the LSU-Georgia SEC Conference Championship game matchup here on Acadiana Sports Station. Number one, and widening the gap, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
And we welcome you back this Saturday, 3 o'clock. LSU, Georgia will battle for SEC supremacy and spots in the college football playoff Final Four. Auburn is a team that played both of them. Back on October 26th, LSU hosted then number 9 ranked Auburn, and LSU won it by a score of 23-20. It's the lowest scoring game that LSU has had this season. The next lowest, Mississippi State, held LSU to 36. You go to November the 16th. Georgia went to then number 12 Auburn and beat the Tigers on the Plains 21-14. I thought it might be fun to get our good friend Brandon Marcello, who covers Auburn for Auburn 24/7, to kind of give his neutral observation of both of these clubs and where does he see the strengths, the weaknesses, and who's going to eventually win the darn thing. So, Brandon, kind enough to join us this afternoon. I appreciate it, my friend. How are things at Auburn these days?
Going well. It's been a crazy, crazy week with that Iron Bowl, and but it wouldn't be Auburn without a crazy November.
Always something, isn't it? It really is. Okay, so that was my idea about why I got in touch with you to kind of tell me what you see in this SEC championship game. Let's go with Georgia first. They beat you at home 21-14. What was your impression and your takeaway from that Georgia ball club?
Well, it's the best defense Auburn's faced all season. They held Auburn without a score through the first three quarters, which had never happened in the Gus Malzahn era at Auburn. And Auburn's offense isn't, you know, great this season. It's good, but it's not great. But that Georgia defense is legit, and that's the thing that stood out to me. The offense is kind of middle of the road a little bit, but that defense is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I think that next to Auburn, as far as matchups, not saying Georgia or Auburn's better defensively, but as far as matchups and the way they match up in this game, the SEC championship game, it'll be about as tough as LSU has faced defensively.
Brandon, we talk about Auburn's defense, and everybody talks about the two interior linemen. It's that front group. What stands out about Georgia? I don't see any superstars. It must be just a collection of 11 that just play well together.
Yeah, and they're deep. They're very, very deep, and that's really the big difference for them is that they can rotate guys in and out and play as many as they need to keep guys fresh, and they don't really lose a step anywhere on the field on defense. I would say that maybe you could find some success throwing against them, but even then, not many people have had that opportunity. That defensive line at Georgia's is pretty good. It really frustrated Auburn, in fact, and one of the big reasons why they were unable to score any points. And that's going to be that's the matchup I'm watching the most Saturday in Atlanta. It's going to be that Georgia defensive line against LSU's offensive line, because if LSU has some struggles there and they somehow get to Joe Burrow, it can make things interesting.
All right. When Auburn came to Tiger Stadium, LSU won it 23-20. I said earlier on that was the lowest scoring game that LSU had, but LSU got 508 yards of offense. They turned it over a couple of times. What was your takeaway from that game about the LSU Tigers?
Well, I think LSU, you know, is still the best team in the country. I know a lot of people have Ohio State number one, but I think LSU inches them out just a little bit just from seeing them in person. I haven't seen Ohio State in person, obviously. I've only seen them on TV, but, you know, everybody's dogging LSU's defense, but they play not just well enough. They play good enough, and they come out with big moments. And I think that's getting lost in the whole mix of Ohio State's blowouts this season. You know, that the defense is so dominant. I think LSU's defense can be dominant when it needs to be. It's not necessarily one that's going to be dominant for every single play, but when they come up big, they come up big, and that's because of Dave Aranda for a lot of reasons. Which, by the way, I'm very surprised his name isn't coming up for head coaching gigs this year, with all things considered. But anyway, having said that, I think LSU's defense, while it's being criticized, I think it's good enough to win a national championship. The offense is more than good enough to win a national championship, and that's why I think they should be number one in the nation heading into the playoff if they beat Georgia, which I think they should do easily.
I remember Auburn playing some weird hybrid kind of a defense where they just dropped so many people back, and they made LSU pick and choose. And do you remember that? That was a unique style of a defense that was implied against LSU.
Yeah, Auburn came out in a 3-7-1. It worked for about a quarter. LSU was really frustrated by it. They made adjustments, obviously, in the last three quarters. The offense really moved the ball very well, but Auburn still had the turnovers to kind of stop those drives from what could have been a game that was in the high 30s for LSU. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I think that Auburn did a good job of just trying to do something different. Auburn obviously has the talent to compete with probably any offense in the country, but mixing it up a little bit just to kind of take a risk, I think, was needed in a game like that because they knew LSU was going to move the ball still and maybe force a turnover or two. And, you know, for the most part, it worked. Like you said, LSU still got their yards, 500-plus, but the defense still managed to hold them to the 23 points and gave the offense an opportunity to win. But that game, to me, as impressive as Auburn's defense was, to me, what was really impressive, you know, was that Auburn wasn't able to really do anything on offense. Outside of two big runs by running back DJ Williams for 71 and 40 yards, the offense didn't really do anything in that game, and that's a big-time credit to LSU's defense.
He is Brandon Marcello, Auburn 24-7. That's the kind of game that Georgia has to make it, right? It's got to be in the 20s. Georgia can't compete if that game gets in the 30s. Their offense just doesn't scare you enough, does it?
No, it doesn't. It's pretty pedestrian, and which is strange to say considering how much talent they've got along the entire offense, and especially with the quarterback. And then, you know, George Pickens at receiver and all those guys. And I guess Pickens is going to miss the first half of this game. So that'll probably be huge. I mean, by the time he gets in the game, it might be a 14-point lead for LSU. I think this is one where, you know, you go into this game, everybody's like, well, LSU's going to blow them out. And then people start to get close to the game. They go, well, Georgia's got a chance here. I just don't see it. I've seen both teams up close. LSU is so much better offensively. I think they can do the things they need to do defensively, obviously, against Georgia to slow them down enough to even win a game that was in the 20s. And I just don't see this game staying in the 20s on LSU's side. So for that point, LSU should win this game by double digits, and I think it won't be close.
How good is that Georgia offensive line, and how did they do against that dominant front from Auburn?
It's okay. You know, it's above average, you know, but I don't think it's really anything, you know, special. They've had their moments this season. I think that really what makes them so special is DeAndre Swift. He's the best player on the field for them, bar none. At running back, that guy can run over anybody and run through anybody and kind of negates anything with your with the blocking or lack of blocking on the offensive line. But the problem is that at least when I saw him against Auburn, I failed to see the explosiveness out of the offense, and even in the running game, that's just not an offense that, you know, will turn out a 70-yard play or a 60-yard play and really blow the top off of everything. Everything of theirs is kind of methodical, and then maybe they get a 20-yard, 25-yard pass here and there. And if they do that against LSU, they're going to lose.
That was kind of the coming out party when people started to realize that Clyde Edwards-Helaire was pretty darn good. He had 26 carries for a buck 36 and a touchdown against Auburn. And he has just been sensational since then.
Yeah, he's fantastic. You know, I was talking to Gus Malzahn actually 2-3 weeks ago, and his name came up, and he was like, that guy, he just still talks about him to this day, about how special of a player he is. Huh. And how he just reeked. Yeah, I mean, even going into that game, he's like, you guys watch out for that. And I remember some of us were like, who's he, you know, and all that. And sure enough, but even a couple of weeks ago, he was talking about, like, that guy, he might be the best in the entire SEC. I mean, no one really wants to talk about him, but the way he plays, just how hard he plays, he loves him. And, you know, Gus was even kind of joking about, like, I wish we had him in our offense and what I could do with him and all that. But he's really been the kind of ingredient to that whole offense that's made it go that a lot of people have overlooked. Even though he's putting up the numbers and he started to get that attention, I think his importance to that offense has really been overlooked. And if he goes down with an injury, I think it changes things a little bit for LSU.
Oh, let's knock on wood on that one. Give us a final score, Brandon Marcello of Auburn 24-7. What do you think?
Well, you know, like I said, I think Georgia's defense is very, very good. It's probably the best defense LSU's going to face this year. But I still see LSU winning this game 35-21.
35-21. We'll take it to the bank, man. Thank you so much, Brandon. I greatly appreciate your neutrality and your honesty. So we hope you're accurate. That's the key.
I think I will be. If LSU loses this game, I will be shocked, absolutely shocked. I think this is the safest bet in all the championship games, including Ohio State and Wisconsin, which everybody thinks is going to be a blowout. But I think this is the safest bet.
All right, Brandon Marcello. Thank you, buddy. Take care of yourself up there in the craziness of winning the Iron Bowl, man. That's awesome. We'll take a time out here. That brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets with 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. Man, if you can't shop right at ShopRite, you really can't shop right at all. They've got everything. And become a Buku Rewards member. It really pays dividends. It's very simple to do. ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets, the very, very best. We'll go in the trenches. Chris Truax next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
There's someone that's part of historic moments in LSU football. There's not a doubt you'll hear them talk with the Blonde Bomber on 103.7 The Game. Let's get back to the Jordy Hultberg Show right now.
All right. CD with some new stuff. New stuff. Yes, indeed. Let's go in the trenches, brought to you by True Lodging RV Park. The perfect RV park located in southwest Louisiana, specifically Hackberry, Louisiana. No better place. From classic comforts to high-speed Wi-Fi, we have got you covered. Hunters, fishermen, bird watchers, and those that work in the natural gas business, it's the place to be. True Lodging RV Park. This is a game for my main man, Chris Truax, former offensive lineman for the Tigers, college offensive line coach, and now true and blue with his Tigers. CT, it's been a while, buddy. The calendar just has been crazy, but we appreciate you coming on again, my man. How have you been?
I'm fantastic, man. I tell you what, I hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving and looking forward to a Merry Christmas. I know we're going to have an exciting finish of this football season. How you been?
I'm really, really good. I thought the Tigers played their best overall game against Texas A&M. The Aggies didn't have a chance. I thought from top to bottom, they just were outstanding in that game.
My hat's off to the LSU coaching staff. I mean, especially to the defensive side of the ball. Just relentless pursuit and great angles to the football and pressure for four quarters. You know, you got to take it maybe with a little grain of salt, though, too, because I think A&M really left everything they had on the field previously over in Georgia. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think they came full blazes loaded. I think after A&M, you know, got defeated by Georgia and they knew they were going to get beat by LSU, I just don't think they were – that where his focus is, you know, their coaching staff didn't have them ready to play. And then when LSU set the tempo, A&M had no answers, and it was over early.
O beat Tom Herman, O beat Jimbo Fisher, O beat Nick Saban. Is there any doubt who the SEC Coach of the Year has to be?
No doubt. Keep them bonuses coming.
You're right about that. You are right about that. I wanted to get your thoughts because Coach O said in his Monday press conference, this is the best offensive line that he's seen all year long. He said they're big, and I'm talking 6'6", 6'7", 350. They're a big offensive line that wants to run the football. They can't get in a shooting match with LSU. They got to keep this game like LSU-Auburn was in the 20s, don't they?
Yeah, they're not going to be able to outscore LSU's offense, that's for sure. But I tell you what, Coach Smart's offensive line, I'm drawing a blank on his name, but they've been grooming and building that offensive line for the success they've had. And, you know, like we talk about in the trenches, that's where it starts. Georgia, you know, has figured that out. Kirby brought that mentality with him from Alabama to Georgia. Let's run the football. Let's play great defense. And, you know, kind of the old LSU mantra a little bit, where we're more now of a pass first, throw second, or pass first, run second type offense. Georgia wants to line up and be physical and outman you at the point of attack and just make sure they, you know, to wear you down and win the fourth quarter.
So what does Dave Aranda, what does LSU do against this, knowing that DeAndre Swift, they want to run him because they want to control the clock. They want to keep Joe Burrow and Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Ja'Marr Chase and the rest of that offense sitting down on the bench. What does Dave Aranda do? Because this Georgia offense doesn't scare me from a passing perspective. They just want to do the old 3 yards and a cloud of dust and keep the clock running.
Well, Jordy, what we've got to do defensively is win on first down. We can't let them get 4 to 5 yards a clip on first down. We've got to keep them under 3 yards an average on first down. Make them get in a second and eight deals, then get in a 3rd and 4 where, you know, they're not really a vertical passing team, but their passing game's predicated off their deep play action looks. So if we can win on first down and maybe make them do something they don't want to do, I think that'll, you know, help us. But we've got to win. Our defensive tackles, our nose guards, really got to be strong in there versus their center and their guards.
Everybody says Chris Truax, kind enough to join us, brought to you by True Lodging RV Park in Hatbury in Cameron Parish. Everybody talks about the Georgia defense. Coach O said it's the best defense overall that we have faced this year. Auburn came up with that 3-7-1 type of defense where they just dropped everybody back, tried to take away the slants, and they held LSU to 23 points. Georgia's not that – everybody says Georgia's a good defense, but they're not that type of defense like LSU and Alabama used to be that they just suffocate you. They give up some plays, but they're pretty darn good when you get in the red zone. So what do you think LSU – it's the same old formula, right? LSU does the same old thing?
Well, you know, what they've done now since, you know, the embarrassment of our defense versus Ole Miss – LSU has really gone to a straight man-free type defense. They've really put about 5 guys up on a line of scrimmage with 2 linebackers in the box. With our defensive tackles are playing kind of over the inside eyes of the offensive tackle, and then we've got kind of 2 strong safeties, kind of a little gray area outside the tight end or outside the open end tackle. We've got 2 linebackers in the core, so it's like a bear defense, okay? But if you can play bear, that means your secondary's really got to be on point. You really got to be able to cover up man to man. And if we can play man to man versus Georgia and keep 7 guys versus the run defense, we've got the best of both worlds. But we're gonna find out because Georgia, like you know it, they're gonna line up there and bring it right at you. It's not like they're in there reinventing the playbook. Mm-hmm. They know what's taking the SEC championship. LSU knows what's got them to the SEC championship. You know, obviously we've got the Heisman Trophy winner on our side, so I mean, my hat goes to LSU every time. And if we can get that kind of consistency on defense like it was against A&M, Jordan, people are going to have a tough time beating LSU.
Yeah, if this game gets in the 30s, Georgia can't win it. There's no way in God's green earth they can win it. They just don't have enough firepower offensively to get into a track race with LSU. The offensive line has been terrific. They've mixed and matched and pieced here and pieced there. They seem to be healthy now. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire sure helps them out. What is it like having a running back like that? What does that do for an offensive line that knows that if you just do your thing for a little bit, man, he's gone?
Well, you know what, Jordan? That's what the great ones do, right? I mean, they make the offensive line right.
Yeah.
Okay? Meaning that they might not get off onto that linebacker or out to that safety or might only get a piece of that defensive lineman. But the way Clyde runs with such low leverage, great balance, great body control, and always square shoulders. And he's really patient to the line of scrimmage, and then he bursts through either a large gap or a small gap, or he wiggles through a tight hole. But he does a great job with his eyes. He's a very patient runner. And then, you know, so he gives those guys a chance up front to kind of hang on their blocks a little bit longer. And, you know, and then the thing is, too, you know, you saw it against Alabama. If you try to tackle him high, heck, he's going to shake you off. And he's really going to bust you for a big explosive run. So it's really a great compliment. And, you know, then you go looking at our wide receivers and our bubble screens, our little leverage screens that LSU throws. It's just a really, really, really good compliment to the offensive staff. They're really utilizing the talent and the resources that we have on offense.
He is Chris Truax. Have they hit you up yet as an alum to help pay for Joe Brady's contract, his raise? Because they've hit me up for it. Man, killing me.
Yeah. Well, you know how it is. You know, that's part of the deal, and everybody's got to do their part. Because, you know, Jordan, that's one thing about getting to this level, but the great programs stay at this level. So whatever we've got to do to stay at this level is what we've got to do, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you. Chris Truax joining us. Now take off your coach's hat and put back your LSU jersey on. What is this season, what has it meant to you, a guy that has been in these battles before and loves LSU, what has this season meant for you personally?
Well, you know, it's great, you know, being an ex-player and really having a personal relationship against Georgia, because we beat them in 1987 over in Athens, and they came to Baton Rouge in 1988, and we beat them in Baton Rouge. And so there's a lot of pride that you take in there, that stadium and that camaraderie and fellowship of what you know as well as anybody that you know, being a part of a team brings to you. You know, you love your brothers, you fight together, you bleed together, you take care of one another, and you protect one another. And so, you know, as an older guy from the 80s, you know, I really admire these guys in the 21st century that are, you know, playing at a really high level, an elite level of football. I mean, they're playing in a pro-style system that is very marketable for them and their branding, going to general managers and, you know, through the 32 NFL teams. So, you know, we win together and we lose together, but that's just the LSU family and fraternity, and obviously the whole state believes the same way.
How cool was Joe Burrow with the B-U-R-R-E-A-U-X on the back of his jersey? I mean, that I think he'll be remembered for that more so than anything he did on the field, which was more than anybody's ever done on the field. But that moment says it all about the kid.
Joe, there's no doubt about it. I'm really surprised I didn't see those jerseys hanging in the academy this week, okay? And not, you talk about NCAA, yeah, you know, these kids getting paid for likenesses and stuff like that. Good Lord, Joe's going to be bitter about that one day when these other kids are making a little money from the NCAA. He's like, hell, I could have retired after his senior year, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Remarkable season. How do you see this? How do you see this championship game going? Put your coaching hat back on.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tremendous football game. There's two excellent programs, two excellent coaching staffs, very aggressive styles offensively and defensively. You know, I think special teams are going to play a role in this. You know, I know we feel very comfortable in Atlanta, and obviously, you know, Georgia, you know, feels comfortable there in the Mercedes Dome there. But I think, you know, the crowd's probably going to be 50-50. I think if we can frustrate Georgia a little bit, shut down their running game, make them go a couple three and out, and we get on top of them, you know, 14-10-0, 14-0, I think they're going to get uncomfortable and start questioning their ability to beat LSU. So I think it's going to be a tremendous ball game, but I really think LSU is going to pull away. And I don't know if they want to go back to the number one spot in the playoff rankings, because since the inception of the BCS playoff ranking, whoever's been number one going into it has not won the national championship. So maybe they're comfortable at number two or wherever.
There's got to be a first.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point, too. You're right. Why not us?
Got to be a first somewhere. I personally think, Chris, I don't know what you think, and I've seen Ohio State play, and if LSU beats Georgia soundly, I think LSU jumps past Ohio State in the one poll that really counts, and that's the last poll. I really believe that.
No, I don't disagree with that. I don't know, you know, what those people in the room, the committee thinks about that. But our strength of schedule and our pedigree, would be a little bit better than Ohio State's, I think, in the game. I mean, we're playing number four. Ohio State's playing number 12, I believe Wisconsin is.
Yep.
And
Number eight.
They're playing Wisconsin's number eight. So, Georgia's, four spots better than them, and we're, you know, six spots better than them. So, I don't know. I don't think that the committee would drop LSU down and bring Ohio State up and then flip-flop it again. I don't know about that because, I just think there's other things they're looking at as well, too. And I think, you know, the eyeball test, I think that really sets that Ole Miss. I think that committee might be thinking, can LSU consistently stop the running game? And we're going to find out here Saturday, you know?
Yeah, we will. That's why we're going to be watching. And Chris Truax always takes us in the trenches. Thank you so much, as always. All the best to your family, my friend.
You got it. You too, my friend. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, there you go. Chris Truax in the trenches, brought to you by True Lodging RV Park, located in the heart of Sportsman's Paradise, Hackberry, Louisiana. It's centrally located to all. We cater to all Louisiana natural gas lodgers. It's a world-class fishing, hunting, and bird-watching sanctuary. True Lodging RV Park. We'll be back to wrap up hour number one of the Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
You're listening to the Jordy Helfberg Show on 103.7 The Game. It's the only show that delivers hot takes from way downtown.
Hi, welcome back. Peterbilt of Louisiana, with locations in Lafayette, Lake Charles, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. New, used, we lease the trucks. It's the best. It's the most reliable and dependable. The LSU football team will be leaving on Thursday to head to Atlanta. That means the equipment truck is leaving today. And they get there with the help of a Peterbilt truck from Peterbilt of Louisiana. It is decked out and it is really cool looking. At Peterbilt of Louisiana, we have certified mechanics for Cummins and Pack Car MX engines. We also work on all makes and all models. So all you truck drivers that are out there listening, as you're on the interstate and you're dialed up 103.7 The Game, it is Peterbilt of Louisiana. We have parts for all makes and models as well. You know you want a Peterbilt truck. You know you do. Treat yourself to the best. Be the best by driving the best. Peterbilt of Louisiana. Joe Burrow's trophy case is open for business. It's official. Joe Burrow is the 2019 Golden Arm Award winner, the first LSU quarterback to join the Golden Arm Club. And on and on and on we will be going. Many, 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 many more awards coming his way. A lot of people kind of scratching their head with the college football playoff chairman, Rob Mullins, who's the athletic director at Oregon. He said the difference in the top three teams, number one Ohio State, number two LSU, number three Clemson, was achievement. That's this week, achievement. Ohio State has four top 25 wins, LSU three, Clemson zero. Last week, Ohio State was number one on the eye test because LSU's defense just wasn't good enough. So he's flip-flopping around. He is just saying whatever he wants to say, however he wants to say it, to whoever wants to listen. I still think, if you do the math, Ohio State's one. They play Wisconsin, who's number eight. They've already played each other in the regular season, and Ohio State won that one. So how much weight does the committee give to when Ohio State beats Wisconsin? LSU's number two. They play Georgia, who's number four. You just add them up. 1 + 8 = 9. 2 + 4 = 6. LSU has the much tougher opponent. It's basically, if you look at it, think about it, it's on Georgia's home turf. So LSU's basically playing a road game. No matter how many LSU fans are there, there's going to be more Georgia fans. There are. Now, LSU fans will make up for it in their veracity. They'll scream from the mountaintops. So I'm not worried about that. But if LSU comes up with a LSU-like performance and does what they are capable of doing, LSU will leapfrog Ohio State, in my mind. Now, we'll see. We'll see what happens come Sunday when the final poll comes out and they determine the group of six and all that stuff with the bowl game slots. And then we're going to have all kinds of players sitting out bowl games. All those Alabama guys that are going to be draft choices, they're going to sit out the bowl game. And that's going to drive Nick Saban crazy. It may drive him to retirement. I don't know. But if LSU wins and wins in a convincing fashion, and the defense doesn't give up 30 points, which I don't think they will, I think LSU has the resume. I think they have everything you need to leapfrog over Ohio State. LSU doesn't want, I think LSU would love to play in Atlanta again in the first semifinal game rather than head out to Arizona. That's a hike and a half for LSU fans. That's expensive. LSU fans can drive to Atlanta. It's a hike to Arizona. So that's important. And if Georgia drops out and Utah does what they're supposed to do against Oregon, Utah will be in. And LSU would play Utah in Atlanta, Georgia. Be a nice little road trip for them. But look, all that doesn't matter. LSU just has to take care of their business. And they got to protect Joe Burrow, keep him up, keep him clean, and let him surgically dissect that Georgia defense. And the LSU defense has to play like they did against A&M and just fly to the football, stop the run game, and put Jake Fromm in a down and distance disadvantage. And then LSU will be fine. But we'll have predictions and much, much more throughout the course of the week as we continue our coverage of the SEC Championship game and the Sun Belt Conference Championship game in the cold confines of Boone, North Carolina. Hour number one is history coming up. Hour number two, we haven't forgotten the Saints. They got a huge matchup as well. What a weekend. I mean, seriously, what a weekend. Get all your honeydews done now and then tell the wife, the girlfriend, the mother, whatever. Give me Saturday and Sunday, please. Just let me watch football. I mean, it's the best weekend ever. It really is. John Hendricks will join us to talk about the Saints, and then Michael Huguenin will pick all the winners of the conference championship games. That's hour number two, and it's straight ahead here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Time to pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two. It's the 3 o'clock hour here on this hump day, Wednesday, December the 4th, 2019. Hope you're having a great afternoon, and thank you for joining us. If you're a Houston Astros fan, you're saddened because apparently it's official. Starting pitcher Gerrit Cole and the New York Yankees have agreed on a six-year, $250 million deal, according to Jeff Passan of ESPN. Six-year, $250 million. He leaves the Astros, and he goes to Darth Vader and the New York Yankees. Yes. Here we go. All right. Hot Stove League is in full swing, but we're in full swing in football mode. So let's get busy. Let's do what we do every day at this time of day. CD, let's take our daily walk around the old sports water cooler, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Well, you know, Blake Ferguson is a kid from Atlanta. He's a tremendous snapper, long snapper, field goal snapper, punch snapper. He's tremendous. He said, for all you LSU fans going to Atlanta this weekend, go eat at a place called Mary, M-A-R-Y, Max, M-A-C, apostrophe S, for lunch or dinner. He says, you will not regret it. I'm going to take him for his word. Mary Max, here we come. CD, good afternoon, my friend.
Good afternoon, Jordy. And I want to kind of touch base on what you were just talking about with him, Gerrit Cole to the New York Yankees. Do you still have the tweet up, Jordy?
I do.
All right, quick question. Does this Jeff Passan account have a blue check mark?
It does not.
You got God there, Jordy.
I got God?
You got God. You've been had. You've been had, Jordy.
Well, this is from my boy Jerry V, Jerry Valancourt, who used to do the Hornets games. He's now doing radio up in North Carolina. He retweeted it, but okay, I trust you more so than any. So, okay, I will believe you, my man, because you are the Twitter king.
Yeah, if you don't see the blue check, odds are you might have got God, and trust me, Jordy, everybody's kind of been getting got over the last, like, several days. Because if you look at what's been going on with a lot of these SEC coaching hires, like, there's so much great stuff that's been going on. Obviously, the Ole Miss Mike Leach rumors. I mean, even they had Jim McElwain headed to Mizzou in some fake Twitter post. They've been doing amazing jobs with this lately.
Yeah, well, I did not know that. So shame on me for not knowing that the blue check meant it was legit. So I'm sorry. There you go.
It's all good, Jordy. It's all good. Sometimes I just got to, like, when I heard that, I was like, because I thought I would have gotten, like, 30,000 notifications of, oh, hey, like, Gerrit Cole to the Yankees or wherever the heck he's going to wind up going. But I think the Yankees are going to be the ones that throw a whole lot of money at him, because I think it's definitely a guy they need to wind up trying to secure soon.
All right. I got it. Okay. We'll see. Next.
All right, Jordy, moving over. I think we got to give some love to Joe Burrow. Joey Heisman, I'm going to call him, the winner of the 2019 Golden Arm Award, the first of many awards. It seems like he's going to lock down.
No question about it. It's just open the trophy case and let's just let them all come in. You know, Glenn Dorsey won so many awards as a defensive lineman, more awards than any LSU football player ever. Burrow may give him the run for the money, plus he'll win the biggest prize of all, and he'll join Dr. Billy Cannon, the late Dr. Billy Cannon, as the second Heisman Trophy winner in LSU football history. He's just a remarkable, remarkable short career that's coming, hopefully, to an end after three games.
Exactly. It seems like he's going to have every chance to play three games. But, you know, let me throw it this way, Jordy. When you just look at what happened last night with the latest college football playoff rankings, things stayed exactly the same. But how sweet was it to see Alabama drop from where they from like 5 or 6 all the way down to 12? 12.
Yes. That's a precipitous fall. Absolutely. I think here again, the bigger you are, the harder you fall, you know, and everybody's tired of Alabama, and they were sending a message to them. Okay, you're not getting in, no way, shape, or form this time. See you later. So it'll be interesting to see how Saban reacts when all of his key players are going to be sitting out whatever bowl game they go to. It'll be very interesting to see what comments he has to say about that.
Oh, I'm sure he's going to have plenty to say about it, Jordy. He's definitely a guy that doesn't mind letting it be known, his complaints about what's going on in the Conference of Dixie. But let's flip it on over, Jordy. What's going on? I think we got to bring up what's happening with the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. Billy Napier, we talked about earlier.
That's awesome.
Named Coach of the Year. And you had 11 players all named to the All-Sunbelt teams, first, second, and third. The honorable mention, you know, that is what it is. But I want to go to the first team here, Jordy. First team, you had three of them with Kevin Dotson, Robert Hunt, and then Raymond Calais, chosen as a special teams return specialist, definitely justified. Mm-hmm. But I'm surprised not to see a single defensive player be mentioned in that list because they had a lot of great players like Jacques Boudreau. I think that guy definitely deserves to be in that spot.
You know what? That he would kindly give that up just to get a win on Saturday. So, that is surprising. I thought the defense, Ron Roberts, has done a tremendous job with them. I thought they were really, really good. They maybe took a step back in the last game against UL Monroe, but giving up 30. But they're going to have to come to play against App State. They got to stop that quarterback, Zach Thomas. They stop him. They can't let that kid control the pace and the tempo of the game. They got to get after him. So a big task ahead of them. But congratulations to Billy Napier. Enjoy him while you can. He ain't going to be here long. I'm just telling you, those other schools love to pluck the successful Sun Belt Conference coaches. Just be on guard for this one.
And I think you have to be, Jordy. It's just such a big deal to have a guy like that perform at the level that he has. But, yeah, think about it, Jordy. Having somebody like a Billy Napier be able to move on and be a head coach somewhere else, possibly in an SEC spot, how great was it be for the Cajuns? Because for years, I mean, you look at Ricky Bussell after he was unceremoniously let go. He was with Tulane, I think, for a year and then fell off the face of the earth in the coaching world. Mark Hutsman, now he's back at the FCS level, making the postseason with Austin Peay. I think this is absolutely huge, Jordy, because it shows they a coach from the Cajuns tree or a head coach that coached the Cajuns can't actually move on up in the world.
And it also means that he took over a program. Whenever you have a new coach come in, that means your program is not doing well. And he is going to leave. If he does leave, when he does leave, he'll have left the program much better than when he got to the program. And that's all you can ask. It is a stepping stone for coaches. If they succeed here, they want to get a Power 5 school job. It's more money. It's a lot more opportunities there. So you should welcome that and be thankful for that. And we'll see what happens. He may not be going anywhere. Maybe it just doesn't work out, or maybe he will. We'll all find out pretty soon, I'm sure.
Exactly. We'll find out something soon enough, Jordy, when it comes to that. But, man, you know, we're talking about the success that the Cajuns have had. I saw this pop up yesterday, and I didn't bring it up just because we didn't have time. And that was Coastal Carolina having 10 players entering the transfer portal just on Monday alone. Wow. That is insane. Wow. And Cole Kublik, you can't really tell if this could be an all-time record. But, man, seeing 10 players transfer all in one day is definitely something concerning for that program.
I'm wondering what they're going to do at Ole Miss. They may have something similar to that.
Shut down the program.
And that's going. What's that?
Shut down the program, Jordy.
Yeah, shut it down. Shut it down. Billy Napier to Ole Miss. You never know. There's your Hot Topics brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the best hot sauce on the planet. The Biard family for nearly 90 years have been doing it and doing it with style and doing it with passion. They get the best hot sauce because they use the finest spices and the finest peppers. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. When we return, John Hendricks will talk Saints Niners here on the Jordy Helfert Show.
Knows what's good when it comes to sports talk. That's why they listen to the Jordy Hultberg Show for the latest on Drew Brees and crew on 103.7 The Game.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. It's time to talk about the New Orleans Saints as they host one of the most anticipated games on the Saints' schedule this year. The San Francisco 49ers come to town right now. The Saints, the number one seed in the NFC, the 49ers, thanks to Seattle's win over Minnesota on Monday night, dropped the 49ers down to number five, but they're both 10 up and two down in the loss column. Let's talk with our good friend John Hendricks of Forbes Sports and Canal Street Chronicles. This is a good one, man. I can't wait for this one. How are you, John?
I'm good, man. How about yourself?
I'm terrific. I mean, we got what a great weekend of football. Friday night, you got the Pac-12 championship game all through Saturday with LSU, Georgia, and then the Saints on Sunday. This ought to be a good one. 49ers are a good ball club. What did you see in the loss to Baltimore that gives you some, maybe a little bit more hope in this one?
Yeah, look, I think when you look at it, there's a lot that you're going to have to look at for, you know, just the way Lamar Jackson was able to run well on the Saints team. I mean, on against the 49ers. I think that bodes well for the Saints and potentially using Taysom Hill. I think that, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, it's kind of weird because he's shown in his times that he can be really good, and there's times where he just looks flat out lost and just doesn't look good. And, you know, Kyle Shanahan's offense is geared towards making the offense click and, you know, designed on smoke screens and just making up and opening up plays. That's why guys like George Kittle have a field day and you get Matt Breida back. So, look, I think when you look at it, I think what you saw against the Ravens game is really encouraging. And the Saints can utilize some of the things that they saw on film to kind of exploit the 49ers. But either way you go, it's just going to be a really tough game.
As well as Jimmy Garoppolo of the 49ers, their quarterback has played this season. He struggled against some top defensive lines, and the Saints are, of late, they're averaging 5 sacks per game in their last 3 games. San Francisco is going to try to run the football. The Saints only allow 88.3 rushing yards per game. So it looks like that brick wall plays right into the hands for the Saints in this one.
Yeah, look, I think, again, it's not about how you start, it's how you finish and stuff on defense and kind of how they say. And, I mean, 9 sacks against the Falcons, who would have thought, especially on the other side, keeping Drew Brees clean in the pocket, you know, didn't he allowing a single sack on him. So that's always encouraging, too. So, look, I think when you look at it, you look at a lot of these players on the Saints, and again, this is no disrespect intended, but, you know, they don't have a lot of players outside Cam Jordan that people know about. And, you know, Sheldon Rankins is a guy who's been coming into his own. I think he's getting more recognition. Marcus Davenport showed some really good signs and flashes there. I think he's done it all season. Just because you can't just measure the sack department as his end-all be-all, just like Cam Jordan. And, you know, they got the other role players like Shy Tuttle, undrafted guy, Trey Hendrickson, third-round pick from a few years ago. You've got Mario Edwards Jr., this guy who comes in rotational snaps. You've got, excuse me, I'm forgetting the other one they picked up from free agency right now. He's eluding me, but, you know, he's also another guy that comes in. David Onyemata is obviously another guy that comes in. Malcolm Brown is who I'm thinking of. So, look, I mean, nobody that really leaps off the page at you like a Aaron Donald or J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney combo and stuff like that, you know, when the Texans had them, but I think they have a lot of guys there that can affect the passer, and I think that's going to be important for him because Garoppolo is a guy that you want to try to get him out of his rhythm and just put him to the ground a few times and really get into his head.
All right. John Hendricks, kind enough to join us. You mentioned how against the Falcons, the offensive line kept Drew Brees clean. That is obviously going to be very vital in this game. That's the strength of the 49ers. Have you been impressed with the Saints and their offensive line despite the injuries?
Yeah, I think you have to. I mean, it's not even a question of if we are. I mean, everybody should. I mean, you figure a lot of people have been riding Nick East, and they say, oh, why do you pay this guy a four-year, $24 million deal? And we talked about it. It's only $4 million guaranteed. So, I mean, that bodes well in the Saints' favor. But, you know, he was a starter in Minnesota. He was a good pass protector, good run blocker, and he's just kind of showed it out. And, you know, it's interesting because the past several games since he's been called on, you know, I think I've been trying to get him in the locker room, but he's somebody who just kind of skates out a little bit quick. And I guess he's just, you know, that mentality. I'm here to do my job and, you know, not get caught up in a lot of things, but he's been playing extremely well. And I think the biggest fear was left tackle spot with Patrick Omame with no Teron Armstead. I thought he did fantastic. And maybe a couple plays where he just didn't get the right push or anything, but he didn't allow a sack, and, you know, run game is fine. And so, again, you got a very talented 49ers defense that's coming to play. A lot of talent on that defensive line, so they're going to need to put their best foot forward, and verdict's still out on whether Armstead plays or not.
Right. I think the run game is critical in this one, and I think we haven't seen much of Latavius Murray in the past game or two, but boy, this looks like a game for Murray, and then you pop him with Kamara. That just seems to me to be the recipe in this one. What do you think about that?
Yeah, look, I think that's a good assessment. You know, I'm interested to see how Michael Thomas goes up against Richard Sherman. I think that's the big thing there, too. And, you know, look, can Jared Cook get open? I think the run game is one thing. I think they can push their, you know, it's really going to be against the offensive line. I know they want to lean on that right side with Warford and Ramchick, and I think that's the right call when they're running the ball. But, you know, look, I don't – and Latavius Murray snaps were kind of down last game, and Alvin Kamara did a good bit. And, I mean, look, you know, overall, that's going to happen through the course of the year is one gets more than the other. I think we saw some Kamara flashes of, you know, the player that we kind of known. I think he struggled a little bit over the past couple of weeks. And, look, they're going to need his best game to really help the offensive move. You know, what I'm concerned about the most is them shooting themselves in the foot and trying to move the chains on third and medium, third and long situations. And somebody has got to step up besides Jared Cook and Michael Thomas. I mean, three drop touchdowns last game, coupled again, coupled to Cook, and then one again. That's not a good look. So got to get somebody that can catch the ball, that's for sure.
Ginn and Cook guaranteed one or two a game. Right in their midst, they're going to drop it. Do you buy into the belief that it's tough for San Francisco, a West Coast team? Last week they played at Baltimore. They fly back to Frisco. This week they're playing in New Orleans. Does that give the Saints an advantage?
Yeah, I think they were staying out in Miami this week just to kind of stay on around and then go back to New Orleans. I mean, generally speaking, yeah, I think it can help. I mean, we saw what it did for the Saints when they stayed on the West Coast in after their Week 2 loss against the Rams. Of course, a lot of things happened after that game. So, you know, I mean, overall, I mean, just jet lag's real. Time change is real. I know I've been a victim of it, too. It's just for them, I think they'll be pretty good, pretty well rested on this one. So we'll see, but it's also those hidden factors we talk about. And, you know, it'll be just in one of those areas. We'll see what happens if it really does affect them and their energy level.
He is John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicles. Boy, that NFC is really, that's a tough, tough conference, man. You got the Saints, one, Seattle, Green Bay, Dallas still in it despite their record, and San Francisco at number five with Minnesota at six. Man, pick your poison. How significant? I think it's the most important thing out there, but home field advantage for the Saints. Man, I don't want to go have to play somewhere else, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think this team could go on the road and play somebody. I don't feel like that's something that's going to totally hinder them, even that people are like, oh, man, if they have to go up to Green Bay to play a game, you know, I don't think that's as bad as some people want to believe. But, look, I think the road to the Super Bowl has to go through New Orleans. I think it's the best thing to go through New Orleans. And, look, I mean, you've seen what happened last year to this team and the way it just transpired for the no call and all that good stuff. So, I mean, it's this is a fan base that is waiting to rip the doors off the Mercedes-Benz Superdome to host this the NFC Championship game, NFC Divisional game. They would love nothing more, and especially to get some revenge for some of the stuff that's happened.
Boy, I think they deserve it. Part of the process is to win Sunday against San Francisco. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicles. How do you see this thing turning out?
Look, I think it's going to be a pretty big slugfest, kind of go back and forth a little bit early on. I wouldn't be surprised if the 49ers come out and try to give everything they got to get in front of the Saints this game. So, and I think the Saints are built to even come back. Obviously, they fell down like 10-0 or something like that. But, look, I think they're going to show some things early, and it's really going to come down to coaching and who's the better coach to make adjustments, because we've seen Peyton's team make some really good halftime adjustments. So I can't pick against the Saints in the Superdome. I just don't see it. I think they've just been playing some of their best football. Drew Brees tells us all the time we've still yet to see some of their best games yet. I think this is one where they come out and they absolutely play a complete game of football. It'll show. I'm picking the Saints. I'm picking them 31-24.
I like the Saints. I like their defense. I like the pressure, Cam Jordan. I like Marcus Davenport coming along. I love what DeMario Davis brings. I like the Saints in this one as well to get to 11-2 and move on. John Hendricks, enjoy the ball game, man. I greatly appreciate it. Keep up the great work for Forbes Sports and Canal Street Chronicles. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, it's back to the college games we go. Michael Hugenin of The Athletic will make all the conference championship picks next here on the Jordy Holtberg Show.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week with Michael Hugenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
Oh, it's conference championship weekend. Yes, indeed. And nobody better at breaking down the ball games than my good friend Michael Hugenin of The Athletic, who kindly joins us once again. Good afternoon, Michael.
How you doing?
I'm doing terrific. The College Football Playoff Committee came out with their announcements. Nothing changed at the top with Ohio State 1, LSU 2, Clemson 3, Georgia 4. The Alabama loss to Auburn drops them down to 12, moves Utah up to 5, Oklahoma to 6. Any issues with that, with the way this is all shaken out to this point in time?
No, I think it's fine. And obviously the interesting aspect is Georgia at 4. If Georgia wins, obviously they're in, and so is LSU, even if LSU loses. So the question is the fourth spot going to be the second SEC team, or is it going to be Oklahoma or Utah? And Utah, I think, is in pretty good position, though it is interesting that Baylor has zoomed all the way up to number 7.
Yeah.
Which means Oklahoma has a chance to get a better win in its conference title game than Utah does, though it also would be the second time this year Oklahoma beats Baylor, and I'm not sure that will truly be looked upon as a separate win. Oregon, if Utah were to beat Oregon, okay, they've beaten Oregon. If Oklahoma were to beat Baylor, it's, oh, they beat the same team twice. And that's the issue I have with the Big 12. I think it's ridiculous that you play a round-robin schedule and you still play a conference title game.
Right.
It's just it doesn't make any sense. You know, rematches and conference title games are bad enough. The Big 12 is guaranteed one, and that's just silly.
Michael, let me ask you this. Let's say Ohio State beats Wisconsin by 20. LSU beats Georgia by 20. Georgia's higher-seeded team at number 4. Does LSU jump Ohio State then?
I think in that scenario, it's a distinct possibility. Plus, this is the second time Ohio State will have beaten Wisconsin.
Yeah.
The first one was played outside in brutal weather.
this one's going to be indoors, where Ohio State's vast superiority and speed is really going to show. I don't think there's any doubt but that Ohio State's going to roll. I'm not sure LSU. I think LSU. Oh, I'm confident LSU's winning. I don't think they're going to roll, though.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get to the games, and let's talk. Start with Friday, and we'll go by the time slots that they occur. And this is the Pac-12 Friday night, 7 o'clock Central Time kickoff. Utah, the fifth seed at 11-1, taking on Oregon, the 13th seed at 10-2. What do you think?
It's interesting. You know, LSU. Its offense this year, all about the impact Joe Brady has made. Utah's offense is a heck of a lot better than it was because they also brought in somebody from the outside who re-energized the offense. They brought in Andy Ludwig, who had been Vanderbilt's OC. Ludwig's an older guy, he's been around forever, but he's a pretty good play caller. The interesting thing about Utah, they've attempted only the 122nd most passes in the nation. This is a run team, but they've completed their 92nd in completions because Tyler Huntley, the quarterback, is completing about 77% of his passes. They have an elite running back, Zach Moss. He's from Fort Lauderdale, as is Huntley. Moss is a stud. Utah's defense is nasty, and I mean that in a nice way. You know, people used to refer to LSU and Alabama's defense as nasty. I'm not saying this Utah defense is as good as those, but this is a defense that, like a lot of those old Alabama and LSU defenses, they knock you down, they step on you. I meant this, I mean it figuratively, not literally. They're just extremely physical. And the way Oregon's playing right now, they're not playing good football. They've lost a ton of receivers. They threw a heck of a lot to their tight end. He's out for the season. Their best freshman receiver's out for the season. Just a ton of injuries. And Justin Herbert, if you've watched him the last couple weeks, does not look like a guy who deserves to go in the top 10. Maybe he rediscovers his magic, but I think this is going to be a Utah win by 7 to 10 points.
All right. Let's go to Saturday, the 11 o'clock Central Time time slot. There's two ball games. The Sun Belt Conference Championship, near and dear to this part of the world, as Billy Napier's Raging Cajuns at 10-2, taking on App State, the Mountaineers, 21st ranked in the country at 11-1.
Yeah, this is an interesting game. They both average 39 points a game. It's frankly phenomenal how close they are in points. I think App State has scored one more point this season than Louisiana Lafayette, which is frankly incredible. And defensively, these are the top two teams in the league defensively as well. I think the home field advantage is going to be a gigantic positive for App State. It's going to be cold. Appalachian, both these teams are well coached. App State won at Lafayette by 10 early this year. So I think App State's going to win again. The question I would have, if I'm a Raging Cajun fan, is Billy Napier going to be back next year as my coach? Because he's done a really good job.
Yeah.
In his two seasons. I mean, this is the second year in a row these teams have played for the Sun Belt title. That's pretty cool in a group of five league because there's usually a lot of changes. But these teams are well coached. There's good foundations in place. And people are noticing the job Napier's doing. Plus his background, he's been an assistant in the SEC and at Clemson. And that's a gigantic selling point.
That definitely is a positive and a plus for him. All right, let's go. The other 11 o'clock time slot game is the Big 12. Baylor, 7th seed at 11-1. Oklahoma, 6th seed, 11-1. This has all the makings of a pretty good one.
Yeah, and I think this is another one. This will be inside. Oklahoma's the faster team. And Oklahoma beat Baylor before without CeeDee Lamb. Inarguably one of the top five receivers in the country. He's a Biletnikoff finalist. Lamb is a stud. And again, they beat Baylor the first time without him. Oklahoma has become much more run oriented of late. Much more. They've attempted 38 passes total in the last two games. Last year, that was three quarters for Kyler Murray. This year, though, this is a run oriented team. The offensive line is not a great pass blocking team, but Oklahoma lined up in the second half when they beat Baylor, ran the ball down their throat. They have not deviated from that the last two games. I think that's going to happen again on Saturday. I think Oklahoma wins by about 10 points, but I think CeeDee Lamb's presence is going to be felt as well. I think he's going to get at least one TD catch, if not two, and he's also an extremely willing blocker. Chances are, if there's a long run by Kennedy Brooks, CeeDee Lamb's going to throw a key block.
All right, let's move to the 2:30 time slot. Conference USA, 20th ranked Cincinnati, comes in at a 10-2 mark. Luke Fickle doing a heck of a job at Cincy. And Memphis with the hottest coach out there, Norvell, at 17th ranked at 11-1. Two good football teams.
And they're playing for the second week in a row at the same site.
Oh, my
Ludicrous.
Gosh. That's ridiculous.
Happened last year in the Mountain West. It was Boise and Fresno 2 weeks in a row. The winner changed, though, from the regular season to the postseason. I think Memphis is going to win both these games. Memphis is a lot better offensively, and this potentially could be Mike Norvell's last game as Memphis coach. Fickle, I think, is a little bit – I think Fickle's waiting for a Big Ten job, a certain Big Ten job to open. Norvell, obviously, he's being mentioned for Florida State, being mentioned for Arkansas, being mentioned for Ole Miss. I think he's going to get one of those three, so this could be his last game at Memphis. But I think Memphis wins it, and I think Memphis is the group of five team that goes to a New Year's Six Bowl.
All right, let's head out to the far west. Boise State at 11-1, 19th ranked, takes on the Rainbows of Hawaii, who are 9-4.
Yeah, Boise, this is a difficult – anytime Hawaii comes to the mainland, it's a difficult – trek because it's an extremely long plane ride. You ain't flying directly from Honolulu to Boise. You got to make a stop. It's not a pleasant situation for Hawaii. And Boise is the better team playing at home. And I mentioned that earlier when it's Lafayette versus App State. Well, can you imagine coming from Hawaii and then you're going to Boise? The weather is going to be vastly different. Plus, again, Boise's the better team. Hawaii likes to spread you out, throw the ball all over the place. The weather could wreak havoc with that. I think Boise wins comfortably. Problem for Boise is they need Cincinnati to beat Memphis to get into the group of six, and I don't think that's happening.
All right, Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, as we continue on conference championship weekend, we'll skip 3 o'clock Central game. We'll move up to the night games, come back to that one. The ACC 6:30 kickoff, 23rd ranked UVA. The Wahoos are 9-3. Third seeded Clemson is 12-0, and Dabo is preaching to the mountaintops, isn't he, about his ball club?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know if anybody underrates the talent level at Clemson. Nobody does. That's an extremely physically gifted squad. Trevor Lawrence is the most talented quarterback in the country. He's not the best. He's the most talented long-term. They got phenomenal receivers. Travis Etienne is tremendous.
Stud.
And if I'm an LSU fan thinking, oh, my God, why, if we had that Louisiana kid on this team, oh, my goodness. As good as Edwards-Helaire has been, Etienne is ACC Player of the Year for a reason. But the ACC is not a good league this year. So there's doubt about Clemson. If it gets in a tight game, can you guys come up with the key plays when you actually play somebody as talented as you are? Because there's nobody as talented as Clemson in the ACC. Virginia needs a monster game from Bryce Perkins. Huge. He's got to play the game of his life. And even then, I don't think it wouldn't be enough. He needs to play the game of his life, have Trevor Lawrence play like he did against North Carolina. I don't think it's going to happen. I think this game has the potential to be interesting into the second half, at least. Unless Clemson turns it over four or five times, Clemson's winning this game.
All right, let's go to the Big Ten. Does this game keep our interest till halftime? Ohio State versus Wisconsin.
I think Ohio State blows their doors in. They hammered Wisconsin the first time they played outside in bad weather. Ohio State's team speed is immensely better than Wisconsin's. So basically they're playing on an indoor track. So all those fast dudes are going to be running by those Wisconsin players. Wisconsin is a well-coached team. They don't typically beat themselves, but Jonathan Taylor's awesome. Who else on Wisconsin's offense
beats
anybody? Right, Jack Cohn is.
They never have a quarterback.
No, he's since that one year they had Russell Wilson. Jack Cohn is a game manager and not the good kind of game manager. He's the kind of game manager who's at his best when he turns around and hands the ball off 40 times. So I think Ohio State is going to rout Wisconsin, and I think that if you're an LSU fan, after you watch LSU beat Georgia, you're going to tune in, and midway through the second quarter, you're going to go, oh, well, not happening, because I think that game's going to be over midway through the second quarter.
All right, let's go back to the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta for the SEC championship game. LSU, the number two seed at 12-0. Georgia holding on at the fourth seed at 11-1. Their only mix up was to South Carolina, a game where Jake Fromm threw three interceptions. It's the only interceptions he's thrown all year. Georgia's offense doesn't scare me. Their receiver core is either hurt or suspended. I don't know how healthy DeAndre Swift is. LSU's offense has put up numbers, staggering numbers. Georgia's defense, everybody says it's the best defense LSU will have played this year. What's your overall viewpoint?
Well, I think that this is the best defense that LSU's going to play this year, but I'm an offense-minded guy, and as good as Georgia's defense is, I think LSU still scores in the 30s, and I don't think Georgia can do that. I mean, the LSU defense has issues. You don't give up 38 points to Vanderbilt. I know it was backups, but you don't give up 38 points to Vanderbilt. You don't let Ole Miss run for 400 yards on you. But again,
they sure played good against A&M now.
They look good. Phenomenal football, coming off their best game of the year. And Georgia's offense is not explosive. And I think that's the aspect that you have to score with LSU. And their leading receiver is Lawrence Cager, not playing. Second leading receiver is George Pickens, suspended for the first half. The third leading receiver is Demetrius Robinson, who has 26 catches. And then the receiver after that is DeAndre Swift. So it's DeAndre Swift is the only guy. I talked earlier about Bryce Perkins having to have a monster game. DeAndre Swift needs to run for 150. If he runs for 150, Georgia's got a legit chance. Other than that, no, because as good as Georgia's defense is, LSU is going to score on them, and Georgia can't keep up because they don't have the playmakers on offense. They don't have the firepower.
Does Ed Orgeron go into this thing saying, we're not taking our starters out. We're going to put up as many points as we can. Because you got to think, like you said, Ohio State's going to just manhandle Wisconsin. What does LSU have to do in this game to move up ahead of them?
It's harder to manhandle Georgia, obviously, because Georgia's better than Wisconsin. Yeah. So I think you play your start. I mean, I think in a title game, unless you're up 42-0 in the second quarter or 42-0 in the third quarter, your starters are playing to the end. But
right.
My presumption is if you're up by 10 with 5 minutes left and you have the ball at the 30, you're trying to score again. You don't want to put the outcome in doubt, but style points matter.
They do.
And I don't care, one of the writers I work with says, the college football playoff selection committee doesn't want to incentivize blowouts, but in a way, the eye test is all about blowouts because you want to look at your best for 60 minutes. And if you're LSU playing Georgia, given how good Georgia is, if you remove any doubt in the third quarter, you need to keep your foot on the gas because my presumption is the same thing will be done by Ohio State. The same thing will be done by Clemson. The same thing will be done by Oklahoma if they have the chance. Whoever, you don't let up in a conference title game.
Let's say LSU beats Georgia, knocks them out, Utah wins, and they become the four seed. So it's Ohio State, LSU, Clemson, and Utah. Where does Ohio State want to play that first semifinal game?
Atlanta?
Okay.
Yeah, I worked closely with the Ohio State writers for us. Evidently, Ohio State fans can drive to Atlanta, and that's what everybody wants. They want their fans to be able to drive. And I'll be honest also, if I'm LSU and that game's in Atlanta, that's the way it breaks down, and number two, LSU plays number three, Clemson. Clemson's a lot closer to Atlanta than LSU is. So I know LSU fans would be there in droves, but so would Clemson fans. And my presumption is Clemson fans before the season, knowing that the Peach Bowl was a semifinal site, probably bought some tickets, thinking, okay, we're going to be number one. We'll be playing in Atlanta. So, but I think Ohio State would be the team that Ohio State supposedly wants to be placed in Atlanta, and which would be very interesting.
LSU's the one seed.
LSU, if it's LSU versus Utah, LSU's like, yeah, we're playing in Atlanta, because if you didn't, Utah to Phoenix is that's
Phoenix
their
is
neck
nothing.
Of the woods. Yeah. You don't want to play in their neck of the woods, exactly.
Okay. Bet Online took the odds off on the Heisman. They said Joe Burrow is such a prohibitive favorite, we're not giving any more bets on it. Is he the guy?
Yeah. Yeah. If he goes 6 of 33 and throws 6 picks, maybe it becomes interesting. But no, he's going to win. The question for me is, are they going to invite 3 guys? Are they going to invite 5 guys? And who's going to finish second? So it's become an interesting race for second. But, yeah, I think Burrow becomes the second guy after Billy Cannon as an LSU player to win it.
Does another LSU Tiger win an award? I mean, that Biletnikoff Award, Ja'Marr Chase has been unbelievable.
Ja'Marr Chase has been unbelievable. I think CeeDee Lamb's the most talented finalist, but he also has the weakest stats. So I think that's Ja'Marr Chase's to win as well. And the interesting thing, I mean, think about it. If Orgeron does not hire Joe Brady, Joe Burrow is not a Heisman finalist, and Ja'Marr Chase catches 40 passes. That's what one
and LSU's not in the Final Four.
Right. That's what one assisting coach can do. And again, I think Utah is in its position because they changed offensive coordinators as well. So, you know, defensive coordinators are always the one. Well, Alex Grinch at Oklahoma is a perfect example. Oklahoma leads the Big 12 in defense. They were like 128th nationally last year. They're in the 40s now. Huge strides because one coach can make a gigantic difference. And Joe Brady is a perfect example. And yeah, I guess now if you're an LSU fan, ULL fans are worried about Napier. LSU fans, you need to pay Joe Brady whatever he wants. Keep him in Baton
Rouge. Pay him a lot. Enjoy championship weekend, my friend. We'll talk next week when all the dust settles. Boy, I can't wait. Thank you, my friend.
All right. Appreciate it. Talk next week. Thanks.
Michael Hugonen of The Athletic. We'll be back to wrap things up here on The Jordy Helpert Show. DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge by Go2Stop. When I'm traveling from Baton Rouge to Lafayette and vice versa, they've got everything you need, including that true soul food deli. Tucked away in the corner, the best cheeseburger ever. I mean, it's worth the drive. Whether you're 99 or 9, they've got everything for everyone in your travel party. That's DC's Little Capital Exxon. Yes, indeed. Today is your birthday. Happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great one with some cake and some ice cream, maybe even a present or two. You share your birthday with. Happy 50th birthday to Jay-Z. Yeah, what a mogul. What an entrepreneur. And happy 70th birthday to Jeff Bridges. Pretty darn good actor. Special thanks to all of our guests today, Brandon Marcello, Chris Truax, John Hendricks, and Michael Hugonen. Tomorrow, keep talking about all the championship matchups, and we'll get the Schwab back on to make his picks of Week 14 of the NFL. All coming your way tomorrow. CD, job well done. Thanks to all of you for listening, to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Thank you so much. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.